Do you think I don't know how your family pities me? Do you think it escapes my notice that any time you or your brothers happen to be at the same party as me, you ask me to dance?
We're polite, he ground out, and we like you.
And you feel sorry for me. You like Felicity, but I don't see you dancing with her every time your paths cross.
He let go of her quite suddenly and crossed his arms.
Well, I don't like her as well as I do you.
She blinked, knocked rather neatly off her verbal stride.
Trust him to go and compliment her in the middle of an argument.
Nothing could have disarmed her more.
And, he continued, with a rather arch and superior lifting of his chin, you have not addressed my original point.
Which was?
That Lady Whistledown will ruin you.
For God's sake, she muttered. You talk as if she were a separate person.
Well, excuse me if I still have difficulty reconciling the woman in front of me with the harridan writing the column.
Colin!
Insulted? He mocked.
Yes, I've worked very hard on that column.
She clenched her fists around the thin fabric of her mint-green morning dress, oblivious to the wrinkled spirals she was creating. She had to do something with her hands, or she'd quite possibly explode with the nervous energy and anger coursing through her veins. Her only other option seemed to be crossing her arms, and she refused to give in to such an obvious show of petulance. Besides, he was crossing his arms, and one of them needed to act older than six.
"I wouldn't dream of denigrating what you've done," he said condescendingly.
"Of course you would," she interrupted.
"No, I wouldn't."
"Then what do you think you're doing?"
"Being an adult,"
he answered, his voice growing loud and impatient.
"One of us has to be."
"Don't you dare speak to me of adult behaviour," she exploded. "You, who run at the very hint of responsibility."
"And what the hell does that mean?" he bit off.
"I thought it was rather obvious."
He drew back.
"I can't believe you're speaking to me like this."
"You can't believe I'm doing it," she taunted, "or that I possess the nerve to do so."
He just stared at her, obviously surprised by her question.
"There's more to me than you think, Colin," she said,
and then, in a quieter tone of voice, she added,
"There's more to me than I used to think."
He said nothing for several moments, and then, as if he just couldn't drag himself away from the topic, he asked, practically between his teeth,
"What did you mean when you said I run from responsibility?"
She pursed her lips, then relaxed as she let out what she hoped would be a calming exhale.
"Why do you think you travel so much?"
"Because I like it," he replied,
his tone clipped.
"And because you're bored out of your mind here in England."
"And that makes me a child, because..."
"Because you're not willing to grow up and do something adult that would keep you in one place."
"Like what?"
Her hands came up in an, I should think it was obvious, sort of gesture.
"Like get married?"
"Is that a proposal?"
he mocked, one corner of his mouth rising into a rather insolent smile. She could feel her cheeks flushing deep and hot, but she forced herself to continue.
"You know it's not. And don't try to change the subject by being deliberately cruel."
She waited for him to say something, perhaps an apology. His silence was an insult, and so she let out a snort and said,
"For heaven's sake, Colin, you're 33.
"And you're 28,
he pointed out, and not in a particularly kind tone of voice. It felt like a punch in the belly, but she was too riled up to retreat into her familiar shell.
"Unlike you," she said with low precision, "I don't have the luxury of asking someone. And unlike you," she added,
her intention now solely to induce the guilt she'd accused him of just minutes earlier,
"I don't have a massive pool of prospective suitors, so I've never had the luxury of saying no."
His lips tightened.
"And you think that your unveiling as Lady Whistledown is going to increase the number of your suitors?"
"Are you trying to be insulting?"
she ground out.
"I'm trying to be realistic. something which you seem to have completely lost sight of.
I never said I was planning to unveil myself as Lady Whistledown.
He snatched the envelope with the final column in it back up off the cushioned bench.
Then what is this about?
She grabbed it back, yanking the paper from the envelope.
I beg your pardon,
she said, every syllable heavy with sarcasm.
I must have missed the sentence proclaiming my identity.
You think this swan song of yours will do anything to dampen the frenzy of interest in Lady Whistledown's identity? Oh, excuse me.
He placed one insolent hand over his heart. Perhaps I should have said your identity. After all, I don't want to deny you your credit.
Now you're just being ugly,
she said, a little voice at the back of her brain wondering why she wasn't crying by now. This was Colin, and she'd loved him forever, and he was acting as if he hated her. Was there anything else in the world more worthy of tears? Or maybe that wasn't it at all. Maybe all this sadness building up inside of her was for the death of a dream. Her dream of him. She'd built up the perfect image of him in her mind, and with every word he spat in her face, it was becoming more and more obvious that her dream was quite simply wrong.
I'm making a point,
he said, snatching the paper back from her hands.
Look at this. It might as well be an invitation for further investigation. You're mocking society, daring them to uncover you.
That's not at all what I'm doing.
It may not be your intention, but it is certainly the end result.
He probably had something of a point there, but she was loath to give him credit for it.
It's a chance I'll have to take,
she replied, crossing her arms and looking pointedly away from him.
I've gone 11 years without detection. I don't see why I'm in need of undue worry now.
His breath left him in a short punch of exasperation.
Do you have any concept of money? Any idea how many people would like Lady Danbury's £1,000?
I have more of a concept of money than you do, she replied, bristling at the insult. And besides, Lady Danbury's reward doesn't make my secret any more vulnerable.
It makes everyone else more determined, and that makes you more vulnerable.
Not to mention, he added with a wry twist to his lips, as my youngest sister pointed out, there is the glory.
Hyacinth?
She asked. He nodded grimly, setting the paper down on the bench beside him.
And if Hyacinth thinks the glory at having uncovered your identity is enviable, then you can be sure she's not the only one. It may very well be why Cressida is pursuing her stupid ruse.
Cressida's doing it for the money, Penelope grumbled. I'm sure of it.
Fine. It doesn't matter why she's doing it. All that matters is that she is. And once you dispose of her with your idiocy...
He slammed his hand against the paper, causing Penelope to wince as a loud crinkle filled the air.
Someone else will take her place.
This is nothing I don't already know,
she said, mostly because she couldn't bear to give him the last word.
Then for the love of God, woman,
he burst out,
let Cressida get away with her scheme.
She's the answer to your prayers.
Her eyes snapped up to his.
You don't know my prayers.
Something in her tone hit Colin squarely in the chest. She hadn't changed his mind, hadn't even budged it, but he couldn't seem to find the right words to fill the moment. He looked at her, then he looked out the window, his mind absently focusing on the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral.
We really are taking the long way home,
he murmured. She didn't say anything. He didn't blame her. It had been a stupid non sequitur. Words to fill the silence and nothing else.
If you let Cressida, he began.
Stop, she implored him. Please, don't say any more. I can't let her do it.
Have you really thought about what you'd gain?
She looked at him sharply.
Do you think I've been able to think of anything else these past few days?
He tried another tactic.
Does it truly matter that people know you were Lady Whistledown? You know that you were clever and fooled us all.
Can't that be enough?
You're not listening to me.
Her mouth remained frozen open, in an odd, incredulous oval, as if she couldn't quite believe that he didn't understand what she was saying.
I don't need for people to know it was me. I just need for them to know it wasn't her.
But clearly you don't mind if people think someone else is Lady Whistledown, he insisted. After all, you've been accusing Lady Danbury for weeks.
I had to accuse someone, she explained. Lady Danbury asked me point blank who I thought it was, and I couldn't very well say myself. Besides, it wouldn't be so very bad if people thought it was Lady Danbury. At least I like Lady Danbury.
Penelope,
how would you feel if your journals were published with Nigel Burbrook as the author?
She demanded. Nigel Burbrook can barely string two sentences together, he said with a derisive snort. I hardly think anyone would believe he could have written my journals. As an afterthought, he gave her a little nod as an apology, since Burbrook was, after all, married to her sister.
Try to imagine it, she ground out, or substitute whomever you think is similar to Cressida.
Penelope, he sighed, I'm not you. You can't compare the two. Besides, if I were to publish my journals, they would hardly ruin me in the eyes of society. She deflated in her seat, sighing loudly, and he knew that his point had been well made. Good, he announced. Then it is decided. We will tear this up. He reached for the sheet of paper.
No, she cried out, practically leaping from her seat. Don't!
But you just said...
I said nothing, she shrilled. All I did was sigh.
Oh, for God's sake, Penelope, he said testily. You clearly agreed with... She gaped at his audacity.
When did I give you leave to interpret my sighs?
He looked at the incriminating paper, still held in his hands, and wondered what on earth he was meant to do with it at this moment.
And anyway,
she continued, her eyes flashing with an anger and fire that made her almost beautiful,
it isn't as if I don't have every last word memorized. You can destroy that paper, but you can't destroy me.
I'd like to, he muttered.
What did you say?
Whistledown, he ground out. I'd like to destroy Whistledown. You, I'm happy to leave as is.
But I am Whistledown.
God help us all. And then something within her simply snapped. All her rage, all her frustration, every last negative feeling she'd kept bottled up inside over the years broke forth, all directed at Colin, who, of all the ton, was probably the least deserving of it.
Why are you so angry with me?
She burst out.
What have I done that is so repellent? Been cleverer than you? Kept a secret? Had a good laugh at the expense of society?
Penelope, you...
No, she said forcefully. You be quiet. It's my turn to speak.
His jaw went slack as he stared at her, shock and disbelief crowding in his eyes.
I am proud of what I've done,
she managed to say, her voice shaking with emotion.
I don't care what you say. I don't care what anyone says. No one can take that from me.
I'm not trying.
I don't need for people to know the truth,
she said, jumping on top of his ill-timed protest.
But I will be damned if I allow Cressida Tombley, the very person who...
Her entire body was trembling now, as memory after memory swept over her, all of them bad. Cressida, renowned for her grace and carriage, tripping and spilling punch on Penelope's gown that first year, the only one her mother had allowed her to buy that wasn't yellow or orange. Cressida, sweetly begging young bachelors to ask Penelope to dance, her requests made with such volume and fervour that Penelope could only be mortified by them. Cressida, saying before a crowd how worried she was about Penelope's appearance.
It's just not healthful to weigh more than 10 stone at our age, she'd cooed.
Penelope never knew whether Cressida had been able to hide her smirk following her barb. She'd fled the room, blinded by tears, unable to ignore the way her hips jiggled as she ran away. Cressida had always known exactly where to stick her sword, and she'd known how to twist her bayonet. It didn't matter that Eloise remained Penelope's champion, or that Lady Bridgerton always tried to bolster her confidence. Penelope had cried herself to sleep more times than she could remember, always due to some well-placed barb from Cressida Cooper Toombley. She'd let Cressida get away with so much in the past, all because she hadn't the courage to stand up for herself. But she couldn't let Cressida have this. Not her secret life. Not the one little corner of her soul that was strong and proud and completely without fear. Penelope might not know how to defend herself, but by God, Lady Whistledown did. "Penelope?" Colin asked cautiously. She looked at him blankly, taking several seconds to remember that it was 1824, not 1814, and she was here in a carriage with Colin Bridgerton, not cowering in the corner of a ballroom, trying to escape Cressida Cooper. "Are you all right?" he asked. She nodded, or at least she tried to. He opened his mouth to say something, then paused, his lips remaining parted for several seconds. Finally, he just placed his hand on hers, saying,
"We'll talk about this later."
This time she did manage a short nod. And truly, she just wanted the entire awful afternoon to be over. But there was one thing she couldn't quite let go of yet.
"Cressida wasn't ruined," she said quietly.
He turned to her, a slight veil of confusion descending over his eyes.
"I beg your pardon?"
Her voice rose slightly in volume.
"Cressida said she was Lady Whistledown, and she wasn't ruined."
"That's because no one believed her," Colin replied. "And besides," he added without thinking, "she's different."
She turned to him slowly, very slowly, with steadfast eyes.
"Different how?"
Something akin to panic began to pound in Colin's chest. He'd known he wasn't saying the right words, even as they'd spilled from his lips. How could one little sentence, one little word, be so very wrong? "She's different." They both knew what he'd meant. Cressida was popular. Cressida was beautiful. Cressida could carry it all off with aplomb. Penelope, on the other hand, she was Penelope. Penelope Featherington. And she hadn't the clout nor the connections to save her from ruin. The Bridgertons could stand behind her and offer support, but even they wouldn't be able to prevent her downfall. Any other scandal might have been manageable, but Lady Whistledown had, at one time or another, insulted almost every person of consequence in the British Isles. Once people were over their surprise, that was when the unkind remarks would begin. Penelope wouldn't be praised for being clever or witty or daring. She'd be called mean and petty and jealous. Colin knew the ton well. He knew how his peers acted. The aristocracy was capable of individual greatness, but collectively they tended to sink to the lowest common denominator, which was very low indeed.
"I see,"
Penelope said into the silence. "No," he said quickly, "you don't. I..."
"No, Colin," she said, sounding almost painfully wise. "I do. I suppose I'd just always hoped you were different."
His eyes caught hers, and somehow his hands were on her shoulders, gripping her with such intensity that she couldn't possibly look away. He didn't say anything, letting his eyes ask his questions.
"I thought you believed in me," she said, "that you saw beyond the ugly duckling."
Her face was so familiar to him. He'd seen it 1,000 times before. And yet, until these past few weeks, he couldn't have said he truly knew it. Would he have remembered that she had a small birthmark near her left earlobe? Had he ever noticed the warm glow to her skin, or that her brown eyes had flecks of gold in them,
right near the pupil. How had he danced with her so many times, and never noticed that her mouth was full and wide and made for kissing? She licked her lips when she was nervous. He'd seen her do that just the other day. Surely she'd done that at some point in the dozen years of their acquaintance, and yet it was only now that the mere sight of her tongue made his body clench with need. "You're not ugly," he told her, his voice low and urgent. Her eyes widened, and he whispered, "You're beautiful." "No," she said, the word barely more than a breath. "Don't say things you don't mean." His fingers dug into her shoulders. "You're beautiful," he repeated. "I don't know how. I don't know when." He touched her lips, feeling her hot breath on his fingertips. "But you are," he whispered. He leaned forward and kissed her, slowly, reverently, no longer quite so surprised that this was happening, that he wanted her so badly. The shock was gone, replaced by a simple, primitive need to claim her, to brand her, to mark her as his. His? He pulled back and looked at her for a moment, his eyes searching her face. Why not?
"What is it?" she whispered.
"You are beautiful," he said, shaking his head in confusion. "I don't know why nobody else sees it." Something warm and lovely began to spread in Penelope's chest. She couldn't quite explain it. It was almost as if someone had heated her blood. It started in her heart and then slowly swept through her arms, her belly, down to the tips of her toes. It made her light-headed. It made her content. It made her whole. She wasn't beautiful. She knew she wasn't beautiful. She knew she'd never be more than passably attractive, and that was only on her good days. But he thought she was beautiful, and when he looked at her, she felt beautiful, and she'd never felt that way before. He kissed her again, his lips hungrier this time, nibbling, caressing, waking her body, rousing her soul. Her belly had begun to tingle, and her skin felt hot and needy where his hands touched her through the thin green fabric of her dress. And never once did she think, "This is wrong." This kiss was everything she'd been brought up to fear and avoid. But she knew, body, mind and soul, that nothing in her life had ever been so right. She had been born for this man, and she'd spent so many years trying to accept the fact that he had been born for someone else. To be proven wrong was the most exquisite pleasure imaginable. She wanted him. She wanted this. She wanted the way he made her feel. She wanted to be beautiful, even if it was only in one man's eyes. They were, she thought dreamily, as he laid her down on the plush cushion of the carriage bench, the only eyes that mattered. She loved him. She had always loved him. Even now, when he was so angry with her that she barely recognized him, when he was so angry with her that she wasn't even sure she liked him, she loved him. And she wanted to be his. The first time he had kissed her, she had accepted his advances with a passive delight, but this time she was determined to be an active partner. She still couldn't quite believe that she was here, with him, and she certainly wasn't ready to let herself dream that he might ever be kissing her on a regular basis. This might never happen again. She might never again feel the exquisite weight of him pressing against her, or the scandalous tickle of his tongue against hers. She had one chance to make a memory that would have to last a lifetime, one chance to reach for bliss. Tomorrow would be awful, knowing that he would find some other woman with whom to laugh and joke and even marry. But today was hers, and by God, she was going to make this a kiss to remember. She reached up and touched his hair. She was hesitant at first. Just because she was determined to be an active, willing partner didn't mean she had a clue what she was doing. His lips were slowly easing all the reason and intelligence from her mind. But still, she couldn't quite help noticing that his hair felt exactly like Eloise's, which she had brushed countless times during their years of friendship. And heaven help her. She giggled. That got his attention, and he lifted his head, his lips touched by an amused smile. "I beg your pardon?" he queried. She shook her head, trying to fight off her smile, knowing she was losing the battle. "Oh, no, you must," he insisted. "I couldn't possibly continue without knowing the reason for the giggle." She felt her cheeks burning, which struck her as ridiculously ill-timed. Here she was, completely misbehaving in the back of a carriage, and it was only now that she had the decency to blush. "Tell me," he murmured, nibbling at her ear. She shook her head. His lips found the exact point where her pulse beat in her throat. "Tell me." All she did, all she could do, was moan, arching her neck to give him greater access. Her dress, which she hadn't even realized had been partially unbuttoned, slid down until her collarbone was exposed, and she watched with giddy fascination as his lips traced the line of it, until his entire face was nuzzled perilously close to her bosom. "Will you tell me?" he whispered, grazing her skin with his teeth.
"Tell you what?" she gasped.
His lips were wicked, moving lower, then lower still.
"Why, you were laughing."
For several seconds, Penelope couldn't even remember what he was talking about. His hand cupped her breast through her dress.
"I'll torment you until you tell me," he threatened.
Penelope's answer was an arch of her back, settling her breast even more firmly in his grasp. She liked his torment.
"I see," he murmured,
simultaneously sliding her bodice down and moving his hand so that his palm grazed her nipple.
"Then perhaps I'll..."
His hand stilled, then lifted.
"Stop."
"No,"
she moaned.
"Then tell me."
She stared at her breast, mesmerized by the sight of it, bare and open to his gaze.
"Tell me,"
he whispered, blowing softly so that his breath brushed across her. Something clenched inside Penelope, deep inside of her, in places that were never talked about.
"Colin, please,"
she begged. He smiled, slow and lazy, satisfied, and still somehow hungry.
"Please what?" he asked.
"Touch me,"
she whispered. His index finger slid along her shoulder.
"Here?"
She shook her head frantically. He trailed down the column of her neck.
"Am I getting closer?"
he murmured. She nodded, her eyes never leaving her breast. He found her nipple again, his fingers tracing slow, tantalizing spirals around it, then on it, and all the while she watched, her body growing tighter and tighter. And all she could hear was her breath, hot and heavy from her lips. Then,
"Colin!"
His name flew from her mouth in a strangled gasp. Surely he couldn't. His lips closed around her, and before she'd even felt more than the heat of him, she bucked off the bench in surprise, her hips pressing shamelessly against his, then settling back down as he ground against her, holding her immobile as he pleasured her.
"Oh, Colin! Colin!"
she gasped, her hands flying around to his back, pressing desperately into his muscles, wanting nothing other than to hold him and keep him and never let him go. He yanked at his shirt, pulling it free from the waist of his breeches, and she followed his cue by slipping her hands under the fabric and running them along the hot skin of his back. She'd never touched a man this way. She'd never touched anyone like this, except maybe herself, and even then, it wasn't like she could easily reach her own back. He groaned when she touched him, then tensed when her fingers skimmed along his skin. Her heart leaped. He liked this. He liked the way she was touching him. She hadn't the least clue what to do with herself, but he liked it just the same.
"You're perfect,"
he whispered against her skin, his lips blazing a trail back up to the underside of her chin. His mouth claimed hers again, this time with increased fervour, and his hand slid underneath to cup her derriere, squeezing and kneading and pressing her up against his arousal.
"My God, I want you,"
he gasped, grinding his hips down.
"I want to strip you bare and sink into you and never let you go."
Penelope groaned with desire, unable to believe how much pleasure she could feel from mere words. He made her feel wicked, naughty, and oh, so desirable, and she never wanted it to end.
"Oh, Penelope,"
he was groaning, his lips and hands growing more frantic.
"Oh, Penelope, oh, Penelope, oh."
He lifted his head very abruptly.
"Oh, God."
"What is it?"
she asked, trying to lift the back of her head from the cushion.
"We've stopped."
It took her a moment to recognize the import of this. If they'd stopped, that meant they'd most likely reached their destination, which was her home.
"Oh, God!"
She started yanking at the bodice of her gown with frantic motions.
"Can't we just ask the driver to keep going?"
She'd already proven herself a complete wanton. There seemed little harm at this point in adding shameless to her list of behaviours. He grabbed the bodice for her and hauled it into place.
"What is the possibility your mother won't have noticed my carriage in front of your house yet?"
"Fairly good, actually,"
she said.
"But Brierly will have done."
"Your butler will recognise my carriage?"
he asked in disbelief. She nodded.
"You came the other day. He always remembers things like that."
His lips twisted in a grimly determined manner.
"Very well, then," he said. "Make yourself presentable."
"I can race up to my room," Penelope said. "No one will see me."
"I doubt that,"
he said ominously, tucking in his shirt and smoothing his hair.
"No, I assure you."
"And I assure you,"
he said, leaping on top of her words.
"You will be seen."
He licked his fingers, then ran them through his hair.
"Do I look presentable?"
"Yes,"
she lied. In truth, he looked rather flushed, with swollen lips and hair that didn't remotely adhere to a current style.
"Good."
He hopped down from the carriage and held his hand out to her.
"You're coming in as well?"
she asked. He looked at her as if she'd suddenly gone daft.
"Of course."
She didn't move, too perplexed by his actions to give her legs the orders to step down. There was certainly no reason he had to accompany her inside. Propriety didn't really demand it, and...
"For God's sake, Penelope,"
he said, grabbing her hand and yanking her down.
"Are you going to marry me or not?"
Chapter 14. She hit the pavement. Penelope was, in her opinion at least, a bit more graceful than most people gave her credit for. She was a good dancer, could play the piano with her fingers arched perfectly, and could usually navigate a crowded room without bumping into an uncommon amount of people or furniture. But when Colin made his rather matter-of-fact proposal, her foot, at the time halfway out of the carriage, found only air. Her left hip found the curb, and her head found Colin's toes.
"Good God, Penelope," he exclaimed, crouching down. "Are you all right?"
"Just fine,"
she managed to get out, searching for the hole in the ground that must have just opened up so that she could crawl into it and die.
"Are you certain?"
"It's nothing, really,"
she replied, holding her cheek, which she was certain now sported a perfect imprint of the top of Colin's boot.
"Just a bit surprised, that is all."
"Why?"
"Why?"
she echoed.
"Yes, why?"
She blinked. Once, twice, then again.
Well, it might have to do with your mentioning marriage."
He yanked her unceremoniously to her feet, nearly dislocating her shoulder in the process.
"Well, What did you think I would say?
She stared at him in disbelief. Was he mad?
Not that,
she finally replied.
I'm not a complete boor,
he muttered. She brushed dust and pebbles off her sleeves.
I never said you were.
I can assure you, he continued, now looking mortally offended, that I do not behave as I did with a woman of your background without rendering a marriage proposal.
Penelope's mouth fell open, leaving her feeling rather like an owl.
Don't you have a reply? He demanded.
I'm still trying to figure out what you said,
she admitted. He planted his hands on his hips and stared at her with a decided lack of indulgence.
You must admit,
she said, her chin dipping until she was regarding him rather dubiously through her lashes.
It did sound rather like you've... How did you say it? Rendered marriage proposals before.
He scowled at her.
Of course I haven't. Now take my arm before it starts to rain.
She looked up at the clear blue sky.
At the rate you're going, he said impatiently, we'll be here for days.
She cleared her throat. Surely you can forgive me my lack of composure in the face of such tremendous surprise.
Now who's speaking in circles? He muttered.
I beg your pardon.
His hand tightened on her arm.
Let's just get going.
Colin!
She nearly shrieked, tripping over her feet as she stumbled up the stairs.
Are you sure?
No time like the present,
he said, almost jauntily. He seemed quite pleased with himself, which puzzled her, because she would have bet her entire fortune, and as Lady Whistledown she'd amassed quite a fortune, that he had not intended to ask her to marry him until the moment his carriage had ground to a halt in front of her house. Perhaps not even until the words had left his lips. He turned to her.
Do I need to knock?
No, he
knocked anyway, or rather banged, if one wanted to be particular about it.
Brierly,
Penelope said through an attempted smile, as the butler opened the door to receive them.
Miss Penelope,
he murmured, one brow rising in surprise. He nodded at Colin.
Mr. Bridgerton.
Is Mrs. Featherington at home?
Colin asked brusquely.
Yes, but...
Excellent!
Colin barged in, pulling Penelope along with him.
Where is she?
In the drawing room. But I should tell you...
But Colin was already halfway down the hall, Penelope one step behind him. Not that she could be anywhere else, seeing as how his hand was wrapped rather tightly around her upper arm.
Mr. Bridgerton!
The butler yelled out, sounding slightly panicked. Penelope twisted, even as her feet continued to follow Colin. Brierly never panicked, about anything. If he didn't think she and Colin ought to enter the drawing room, he had to have a very good reason. Maybe even...
Oh,
no! Penelope dug in her heels, skidding along the hardwood floor, as Colin dragged her along by the arm.
Colin!
She said, gulping on the first syllable.
Colin!
What?
He asked, not breaking his stride.
I really think...
Ah!
Her skidding heels hit the edge of the runner carpet, sending her flying forward. He caught her neatly and set her on her feet.
What is it?
She glanced nervously at the door to the drawing room. It was slightly ajar, but maybe there was enough noise inside so that her mother hadn't yet heard them approaching.
Penelope?
Colin prompted impatiently.
There was still time to escape, wasn't there?
She looked frantically about. Not that she was likely to find a solution to her problems anywhere in the hall.
Penelope,
Colin said, now tapping his foot.
What the devil is the matter?
She looked back to Brierly, who simply shrugged his shoulders.
This really might not be the best time to speak to my mother.
He raised one brow, looking rather like the butler had just seconds earlier.
You're not planning to refuse me, are you?
No, of course not,
she said hastily, even though she hadn't truly accepted the fact that he even intended to offer for her.
"Then this is an excellent time," he stated, his tone inviting no further protest.
"But it's..."
"What?" "Tuesday," she thought miserably, and it was just past noon, which meant... "Let's go," Colin said, striding forward, and before she could stop him, he pushed open the door. Colin's first thought upon stepping into the drawing room was that the day, while certainly not proceeding in any manner he might have anticipated when he'd risen from bed that morning, was turning out to be a most excellent endeavour. Marriage to Penelope was an eminently sensible idea, and surprisingly appealing as well, if their recent encounter in the carriage was any indication. His second thought was that he'd just entered his worst nightmare, because Penelope's mother was not alone in the drawing-room. Every last Featherington, current and former, was there, along with assorted spouses and even a cat. It was the most frightening assemblage of people Colin had ever witnessed. Penelope's family was, well, except for Felicity, whom he'd always held in some suspicion, how could one truly trust anyone who was such good friends with Hyacinth? Her family was, well, he couldn't think of a good word for it. Certainly nothing complimentary, although he'd like to think he could have avoided an outright insult. And really, was there a word that effectively combined slightly dim, overly talkative, rather meddlesome, excruciatingly dull, and one couldn't forget this, not with Robert Huxley, a recent addition to the clan, uncommonly loud? So Colin just smiled, his great, big, friendly, slightly mischievous smile. It almost always worked, and today was no exception. The Featheringtons all smiled right back at him, and, thank God, said nothing. At least not right away.
"Colin," Mrs. Featherington said with visible surprise, "how nice of you to bring Penelope home for our family meeting."
"Your family meeting?" he echoed. He looked to Penelope, who was standing next to him, looking rather ill.
"Every Tuesday," she said, smiling weakly. "Didn't I mention it?"
"No," he replied, even though it was obvious her question had been for the benefit of their audience. "No, you didn't mention it."
"Bridgerton!"
bellowed Robert Huxley, who was married to Penelope's eldest sister Prudence.
"Huxley,"
Colin returned, taking a discreet step back, best to protect his eardrums, in case Penelope's brother-in-law decided to leave his post near the window. Thankfully, Huxley stayed put, but Penelope's other brother-in-law, the well-meaning but vacant-minded Nigel Burbrook, did cross the room, greeting Colin with a hearty slap on the back.
"Wasn't expecting you,"
Burbrook said jovially.
"No," Colin murmured. "I wouldn't think so."
"Just family, after all," Burbrook said. "And you're not family. Not my family, at least."
"Not yet, anyway," Colin murmured, stealing a glance at Penelope. She was blushing.
Then he looked back at Mrs. Featherington, who looked as if she might faint from excitement. Colin groaned through his smile. He hadn't meant for her to hear his comment about possibly joining the family. For some reason, he'd wanted to retain an element of surprise before he asked for Penelope's hand. If Portia Featherington knew his intentions ahead of time, she'd likely twist the whole thing around, in her mind at least, so that she had somehow orchestrated the match herself. And for some reason, Colin found that exceedingly distasteful.
"I hope I'm not intruding," he said to Mrs. Featherington.
"No, of course not," she said quickly. "We are delighted to have you here, at a family gathering."
But she looked rather odd, not precisely undecided about his presence there, but certainly unsure of what her next move should be. She was chewing on her lower lip, and then she darted a furtive glance at Felicity, of all people. Colin turned to Felicity.
She was looking at Penelope, a small, secret smile fixed to her face. Penelope was glaring at her mother, her mouth twisted into an irritated grimace. Colin's gaze went from Featherington to Featherington to Featherington. Something was clearly simmering under the surface here, and if he weren't trying to figure out, A, how to avoid being trapped into conversation with Penelope's relations, while, B, somehow managing to issue a proposal of marriage at the same time, well, he'd be rather curious as to what was causing all the secret, underhanded glances being tossed back and forth between the Featherington women. Mrs. Featherington cast one last glance at Felicity, did a little gesture that Colin could have sworn meant sit up straight, then fixed her attention on Colin.
"Won't you sit down?"
she asked, smiling widely and patting the seat next to her on the sofa. "Of course," he murmured, because there was really no getting out of it now. He still had to ask for Penelope's hand in marriage, and even if he didn't particularly want to do it in front of every last Featherington and their two inane spouses, he was stuck here, at least until a polite opportunity to make his escape presented itself. He turned and offered his arm to the woman he intended to make his bride. "Penelope?"
Yes, of course," she stammered, placing her hand at the crook of his elbow.
"Oh, yes,"
Mrs. Featherington said, as if she'd completely forgotten about her daughter's presence.
"Terribly sorry, Penelope. Didn't see you. Won't you please go and ask cook to increase our order? We'll surely need more food with Mr. Bridgerton here."
"Of course," Penelope said, the corners of her lips quivering.
"Can't she ring for it?" Colin asked loudly.
"What?"
Mrs. Featherington said distractedly.
"Well, I suppose she could, but it would take longer, and Penelope doesn't mind, do you?"
Penelope gave her head a little shake.
"I mind," Colin said.
Mrs. Featherington let out a little, "Oh," of surprise, then said,
"Very well. Penelope, why don't you sit right there?"
She motioned to a chair that was not quite situated to be a part of the inner conversation circle. Felicity, who was seated directly across from her mother, jumped up.
"Penelope, please take my seat."
"No,"
Mrs. Featherington said firmly.
"You have been feeling under the weather, Felicity. You need to sit."
Colin thought Felicity looked the picture of perfect health, but she sat back down.
"Penelope,"
Prudence said loudly, from over by the window,
"I need to speak with you."
Penelope glanced helplessly from Colin to Prudence to Felicity to her mother. Colin yanked her in closer.
"I need to speak with her as well," he said smoothly.
"Right. Well, I suppose there is room for both of you,"
Mrs. Featherington said, scooting over on the sofa. Colin was caught between the good manners that had been drummed into his head since birth and the overwhelming urge to strangle the woman who would someday be his mother-in-law. He had no idea why she was treating Penelope like some sort of lesser-favoured stepchild, but really, it had to stop.
"What brings you this way?"
yelled Robert Huxley. Colin touched his ears. He couldn't help himself. Then said,
"I was..."
"Oh, goodness,"
fluttered Mrs. Featherington.
"We do not mean to interrogate our guest, do we?"
Colin hadn't really thought Huxley's question constituted an interrogation, but he didn't really want to insult Mrs. Featherington by saying so. So he merely nodded and said something completely meaningless like,
"Yes, well, of course."
"Of course what?"
asked Philippa. Philippa was married to Nigel Burbrook, and Colin had always thought it was a rather good match indeed.
"I'm sorry," he queried.
"You said, of course,"
Philippa said.
"Of course, what?"
"I don't know," Colin said.
"Oh, well then, why did you..."
"Philippa,"
Mrs. Featherington said loudly,
"perhaps you should fetch the food. since Penelope has forgotten to ring for it.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Penelope said quickly, starting to rise to her feet. Don't worry, Colin said through a smooth smile, grabbing hold of her hand and yanking her back down. Your mother said Prudence could go.
Philippa,
Penelope said. What about Philippa?
She said Philippa could go, not Prudence.
He wondered what had happened to her brain, because somewhere between his carriage and this sofa, it had clearly disappeared. Does it matter? He asked.
No, not really, but...
Felicity! Mrs. Featherington interrupted. Why don't you tell Mr. Bridgerton about your watercolours?
For the life of him, Colin couldn't imagine a less interesting topic, except maybe for Philippa's watercolours, but he nonetheless turned to the youngest Featherington with a friendly smile and asked, And how are your watercolours? But Felicity, bless her heart, gave him a rather friendly smile herself, and said nothing but,
I imagine they're fine, thank you.
Mrs. Featherington looked as if she'd just swallowed a live eel, then exclaimed,
Felicity!
Yes,
Felicity said sweetly.
You didn't tell him that you'd won an award.
She turned to Colin.
Felicity's watercolours are very unique.
She turned back to Felicity.
Do tell Mr. Bridgerton about your award.
Oh, I don't imagine he is interested in that.
Of course he is,
Mrs. Featherington ground out. Normally, Colin would have chimed in with, Of course I am, since he was, after all, an exceedingly affable fellow. But doing so would have validated Mrs. Featherington's statement, and, perhaps more critically, ruined Felicity's good fun. And Felicity appeared to be having a lot of fun.
Philippa,
she said,
weren't you going to go after the food?
Oh, right,
Philippa replied.
Forgot all about it. I do that a lot. Come along, Nigel. You can keep me company.
Righto,
Nigel beamed, and then he and Philippa left the room, giggling all the way. Colin reaffirmed his conviction that the Burbrook-Featherington match had been a good one indeed.
I think I shall go out to the garden,
Prudence suddenly announced, taking hold of her husband's arm.
Penelope, why don't you come with me?
Penelope opened her mouth a few seconds before she figured out what to say, leaving her looking a little bit like a confused fish. But in Colin's opinion, a rather fetching fish, if such a thing were possible. Finally, her chin took on a resolute mien, and she said,
I don't think so, Prudence.
Penelope!
Mrs. Featherington exclaimed.
I need you to show me something,
Prudence ground out.
I really think I'm needed here,
Penelope replied.
I can join you later this afternoon if you like. I need you now.
Penelope looked to her sister in surprise, clearly not expecting quite so much resistance.
I'm sorry, Prudence, she reiterated. I believe I'm needed here.
Nonsense,
Mrs. Featherington said breezily.
Felicity and I can keep Mr. Bridgerton company.
Felicity jumped to her feet.
Oh, no,
she exclaimed, her eyes round and innocent.
I forgot something.
What?
Mrs. Featherington asked between her teeth.
Could you possibly have forgotten?
Ah, my watercolours.
She turned to Colin with a sweet, mischievous smile.
You did want to see them, didn't you?
Of course, he murmured, deciding he very much liked Penelope's younger sister. Seeing as how they are so unique.
One might say they are uniquely ordinary,
Felicity said, with an overly earnest nod.
Penelope,
Mrs. Featherington said, obviously trying to hide her annoyance,
would you be so kind as to fetch Felicity's watercolours?
Penelope doesn't know where they are,
Felicity said quickly.
Why don't you tell her?
For God's sake!
Colin finally exploded. Let Felicity go. I need a private moment with you anyway. Silence reigned. It was the first time Colin Bridgerton had ever lost his temper in public. Beside him, Colin heard Penelope let out a little gasp, but when he glanced at her, she was hiding a tiny smile behind her hand, and that made him feel ridiculously good.
"A private moment?"
Mrs. Featherington echoed, her hand fluttering to her chest. She glanced over at Prudence and Robert, who were still standing by the window. They immediately left the room, although not without a fair bit of grumbling on Prudence's part.
"Penelope," Mrs. Featherington said, "perhaps you should accompany Felicity."
"Penelope will remain," Colin ground out.
"Penelope?"
Mrs. Featherington asked doubtfully.
"Yes,"
he said slowly, in case she still didn't understand his meaning.
"Penelope!"
"But—"
Colin gave her such a glare that she actually drew back and folded her hands in her lap.
"I'm gone!"
Felicity chirped, sailing out of the room. But before she closed the door behind her, Colin saw her give a quick wink to Penelope. And Penelope smiled, love for her younger sister shining clearly in her eyes. Colin relaxed. He hadn't realised just how tense Penelope's misery was making him, and she was definitely miserable. Good God, he couldn't wait to remove her from the bosom of her ridiculous family. Mrs. Featherington's lips spread into a feeble attempt at a smile. She looked from Colin to Penelope and back again, and then finally said,
"You desired a word?"
"Yes," he replied, eager to get this done with. "I would be honoured if you would grant me your daughter's hand in marriage."
For a moment, Mrs. Featherington made no reaction. Then her eyes grew round, her mouth grew round, her body, well, her body was already round, and she clapped her hands together, unable to say anything other than,
"Oh, oh!"
And then,
"Felicity! Felicity!"
"Felicity?" Portia Featherington jumped to her feet, ran to the door, and actually screamed like a fishwife.
"Felicity! Felicity!"
"Oh, Mother!" Penelope moaned, closing her eyes.
"Why are you summoning Felicity?"
Colin asked, rising to his feet. Mrs. Featherington turned to him quizzically.
"Don't you want to marry Felicity?"
Colin actually thought he might be sick.
"No, for God's sake, I don't want to marry Felicity," he snapped. "If I'd wanted to marry Felicity, I'd hardly have sent her upstairs for her bloody watercolours, would I?"
Mrs. Featherington swallowed uncomfortably.
"Mr. Bridgerton,"
she said, wringing her hands together,
"I don't understand."
He stared at her in horror, which then turned to disgust.
"Penelope,"
he said, grabbing her hand and yanking her until she was pressed close to his side.
"I want to marry Penelope."
"Penelope?"
Mrs. Featherington echoed.
"But..."
"But what?"
he interrupted, his voice pure menace.
But... It's all right, Colin,"
Penelope said hastily.
"No, it is not all right,"
he exploded.
"I've never given any indication I'm the least bit interested in Felicity."
Felicity appeared in the doorway, clapped her hand over her mouth, and quickly disappeared, wisely shutting the door behind her.
"Yes," Penelope said placatingly, shooting a quick look at her mother. "But Felicity is unmarried, and..."
"So are you,"
he pointed out.
"I know. But I'm old, and—"
"And Felicity is an infant,"
he spat.
"Good God! Marrying her would be like marrying Hyacinth."
Except for the incest,"
Penelope said. He gave her an extremely unamused look.
"Right,"
she said, mostly to fill the silence.
"It's just a terrible misunderstanding, isn't it?"
No one said anything. Penelope looked at Colin pleadingly.
"Isn't it?"
"It certainly is," he muttered.
She turned to her mother.
"Mama?"
"Penelope?" she murmured, and Penelope knew that her mother wasn't asking her a question. Rather, she was still expressing her disbelief that Colin would want to marry her. And
Oh, but it hurts so much. You'd think she'd be used to it by now.
I would like to marry Mr. Bridgerton, Penelope said, trying to summon up as much quiet dignity as she could manage. He asked me, and I said yes.
Well, of course you would say yes, her mother retorted. You would have to be an idiot to say no.
Mrs. Featherington, Colin said tightly, I suggest you begin treating my future wife with a bit more respect.
Colin, it's not necessary, Penelope said, placing her hand on his arm.
But the truth was, her heart was soaring. He might not love her, but he cared about her. No man could defend a woman with such fierce protectiveness without caring for her a little.
It is necessary, he returned. For God's sake, Penelope, I arrived with you. I made it abundantly clear that I required your presence in the room, and I practically shoved Felicity out the door to fetch her watercolours. Why on earth would anyone think I wanted Felicity?
Mrs. Featherington opened and closed her mouth several times, before finally saying,
I love Penelope, of course, but...
But do you know her? Colin shot back. She's lovely and intelligent, and has a fine sense of humour. Who wouldn't want to marry a woman like that?
Penelope would have melted to the floor if she weren't already holding onto his hand.
Thank you,
she whispered, not caring if her mother heard her, not even really caring if Colin heard her. Somehow she needed to say the words for herself. Not what she thought she was. Lady Danbury's face swam before her eyes, her expression warm and just a little bit cunning. Something more. Maybe Penelope was something more, and maybe Colin was the only other person to realise that as well. It made her love him all the more. Her mother cleared her throat, then stepped forward and gave Penelope a hug. It was, at first, a hesitant embrace on both of their parts, but then Portia tightened her arms around her third-born daughter, and with a choked cry, Penelope found herself returning the hug in equal measure.
I do love you, Penelope, Portia said, and I am very pleased for you.
She drew back and wiped a tear from her eye.
I shall be lonely without you, of course, since I'd assumed we would grow old together. But this is what's best for you, and that, I suppose, is what being a mother is all about.
Penelope let out a loud sniffle, then blindly reached for Colin's handkerchief, which she had already pulled from his pocket and was holding in front of her.
You'll learn some day, Portia said, patting her on the arm.
She turned to Colin and said,
We are delighted to welcome you to the family.
He nodded, not terribly warmly, but Penelope thought he made a rather nice effort, considering how angry he'd been just moments earlier. Penelope smiled and squeezed his hand, aware that she was about to embark upon the adventure of her life. Chapter 15.
You know,
Eloise said, 3 days after Colin and Penelope made their surprise announcement,
it's really a pity that Lady Whistledown has retired, because this would have been the coup of the decade.
Certainly from Lady Whistledown's viewpoint, Penelope murmured, lifting her teacup to her lips and keeping her eyes trained on the wall clock in Lady Bridgerton's informal drawing-room. Better not to look at Eloise directly. She had a way of noticing secrets in a person's eyes. It was funny. Penelope had gone years without worrying that Eloise would discover the truth about Lady Whistledown, at least not worrying over much. But now that Colin knew, it somehow felt as if her secret were floating about in the air, like particles of dust, just waiting to form into a cloud of knowledge. Maybe the Bridgertons were like dominoes. Once one found out, it was only a matter of time before they all fell.
What do you mean?
Eloise asked, breaking into Penelope's nervous thoughts.
If I recall correctly,
Penelope said, very carefully,
she once wrote that she would have to retire if I ever married a Bridgerton.
Eloise's eyes bugged out.
She did? or something like that,
Penelope said.
You're joking,
Eloise said, making a pfft sort of sound as she waved her hand dismissively.
She would never have been that cruel.
Penelope coughed, not really thinking that she could end the topic by faking a biscuit crumb in her throat, but trying nonetheless.
No, really,
Eloise persisted.
What did she say?
I don't recall precisely.
Try.
Penelope stalled by setting her cup down and reaching for another biscuit. They were alone for tea, which was odd, but Lady Bridgerton had dragged Colin off on some errand regarding the upcoming wedding, set for only a month hence, and Hyacinth was off shopping with Felicity, who had, upon hearing Penelope's news, thrown her arms around her sister and shrieked her delight until Penelope's ears had gone numb. As far as sisterly moments went, it had been something wonderful.
Well, Penelope said, chewing on a bite of biscuit, I believe she said that if I married a Bridgerton, it would be the end of the world as she knew it, and as she wouldn't be able to make heads or tails of such a world, she would have to retire immediately.
Eloise stared at her for a moment.
That's not a precise recollection. One doesn't forget things like that,
Penelope demurred.
Hmm.
Eloise's nose wrinkled with disdain.
Well, that was rather horrid of her, I must say. Now I doubly wish she was still writing, because she would have to eat an entire gaggle of crow. Do crows gather in gaggles? I don't know,
Eloise replied promptly,
but they should. You're a very good friend, Eloise,
Penelope said quietly.
Yes,
Eloise said with an affected sigh.
I know. The very best.
Penelope smiled. Eloise's breezy reply made it clear that she wasn't in the mood for emotion or nostalgia, which was fine. There was a time and a place for everything. Penelope had said what she wanted to say, and she knew that Eloise returned the sentiment, even if she preferred to joke and tease at that moment.
I must confess, though,
Eloise said, reaching for another biscuit,
you and Colin did surprise me. We surprised me as well,
Penelope admitted wryly.
Not that I'm not delighted, Eloise hastened to add. There is no one I'd rather have as a sister. Well, aside from the ones I already have, of course, and if I'd ever dreamed the two of you were inclined in that direction, I'm sure I would have meddled horribly. I know,
Penelope said, laughter forcing her lips up at the corners.
Yes, well,
Eloise waved the comment away.
I'm not known for minding my own business. What's that on your fingers?
Penelope asked, leaning forward for a better look.
What? That? Oh, nothing.
But she settled her hands in her lap nonetheless.
It's not nothing, Penelope said. Let me see. It looks like ink. Well, of course it does. It is ink. Then why didn't you say so when I asked? Because,
Eloise said pertly,
it's none of your business.
Penelope drew back in shock at Eloise's sharp tone.
I'm terribly sorry, she said stiffly. I had no idea it was such a sensitive subject. Oh, it's not,
Eloise said quickly.
Don't be silly. It's just that I'm clumsy, and I can't write without getting ink all over my fingers. I suppose I could wear gloves, but then they'd be stained, and I'd be forever replacing them. And I can assure you that I have no wish to spend my entire allowance, meagre as it is, on gloves.
Penelope stared at her through her lengthy explanation, then asked,
What were you writing? Nothing,
Eloise said dismissively.
Just letters.
Penelope could tell from Eloise's brisk tone that she didn't particularly want to subject the topic to further exploration, but she was being so characteristically evasive that Penelope couldn't resist asking,
To whom? The letters?
Yes, Penelope replied, even though she thought that was rather obvious.
Oh, no one. Well, unless they're a diary, they're not to no one,
Penelope said, impatience adding a short tinge to her voice. Eloise gave her a vaguely affronted look.
"You're rather nosy today." "Only because you're being so evasive." "They're just a Francesca," Eloise said with a little snort.
"Well then, why didn't you say so?"
Eloise crossed her arms.
"Perhaps I didn't appreciate your questioning me."
Penelope's mouth fell open. She couldn't remember the last time she and Eloise had had anything even remotely approaching a row.
"Eloise," she said, a shock showing in her voice, "what is wrong?" "Nothing is wrong. I know that's not true."
Eloise said nothing, just pursed her lips and glanced toward the window, a clear attempt to end the conversation.
"Are you angry with me?" Penelope persisted. "Why would I be angry with you?"
"I don't know, but it's clear that you are."
Eloise let out a little sigh.
"I'm not angry." "Well, you're something."
I'm just...
She shook her head.
"I don't know what I am. Restless, I suppose. Out of sorts."
Penelope was silent as she digested that, then said quietly,
"Is there anything I can do?"
"No."
Eloise smiled wryly.
"If there were, you can be sure I'd have already asked it of you."
Penelope felt something that was almost a laugh rising within her. How like Eloise to make such a comment.
"I suppose it's..."
Eloise began, her chin lifting in thought.
"No, never mind."
"No,"
Penelope said, reaching out and taking her friend's hand.
"Tell me."
Eloise pulled her hand free and looked away.
"You think I'm silly?"
"Maybe,"
Penelope said with a smile.
"But you'll still be my very closest friend."
"Oh, Penelope, but I'm not,"
Eloise said sadly.
"I'm not worthy of it."
"Eloise, don't talk such madness. I'd have gone right out insane, trying to navigate London and society and the Ton without you."
Eloise smiled.
"We did have fun, didn't we?"
"Well, yes, when I was with you,"
Penelope admitted.
"The rest of the time I was bloody miserable."
"Penelope! I don't believe I've ever heard you curse before."
Penelope gave her a sheepish smile.
"It slipped out. And besides, I couldn't possibly think of a better adjective to describe life for a wallflower among the Ton."
Eloise let out an unexpected chuckle.
"Now that's a book I would like to read. A Wallflower Among the Ton. Not unless you're given to tragedies." "Oh, come now, it couldn't be a tragedy. It would have to be a romance. You're getting your happy ending after all."
Penelope smiled. As strange as it was, she was getting her happy ending. Colin had been a lovely and attentive fiancé, at least for the 3 days that he'd been playing that role. And it couldn't have been particularly easy. They'd been subject to more speculation and scrutiny than Penelope could have imagined. She wasn't surprised, though, when she, as Lady Whistledown, had written that the world would end as she knew it if a Featherington married a Bridgerton. She rather thought she'd been echoing a prevalent sentiment. To say that the Ton had been shocked by Penelope's engagement would have been an understatement indeed. But much as Penelope liked to anticipate and reflect upon her upcoming marriage, she was still a bit disturbed about Eloise's strange mood.
"Eloise," she said seriously, "I want you to tell me what has you so upset."
Eloise sighed.
"I'd hoped you'd forgotten about it." "I've learned tenacity from the master,"
Penelope commented. That made Eloise smile, but only for a moment.
"I feel so disloyal," she said.
"What have you done?"
"Oh, nothing."
She patted her heart.
"It's all inside. I..."
She stopped, looked to the side, her eyes settling on the fringed corner of the carpet. But Penelope suspected that she didn't see much of anything. At least nothing beyond what was rumbling about in her mind.
"I'm so happy for you,"
Eloise said, the words tumbling forth in odd bursts, punctuated by awkward pauses.
"And I honestly think I can really, truly say that I'm not jealous. But at the same time..."
Penelope waited for Eloise to collect her thoughts. Or maybe she was collecting her courage.
"At the same time," she said,
so softly that Penelope could barely hear her,
"I suppose I always thought you'd be a spinster right along with me. I've chosen this life. I know that I have. I could have married."
"I know," Penelope said quietly.
"But I never did, because it never seemed right. And I didn't want to settle for anything less than what my brothers and sister have. And now Colin too," she said, motioning toward Penelope.
Penelope didn't mention that Colin had never said he loved her. It didn't seem like the right time, or, frankly, the sort of thing she cared to share. Besides, even if he didn't love her, she still thought he cared about her, and that was enough.
"I would never have wanted you not to marry," Eloise explained. "I just never thought you would."
She closed her eyes, looking quite agonized.
"That came out all wrong. I've insulted you terribly." "No, you haven't," Penelope said, meaning it. "I never thought I would marry either."
Eloise nodded sadly.
"And somehow it made it all right. I was almost 28 and unmarried, and you were already 28 and unmarried, and we'd always have each other. But now you have Colin. I still have you, too. At least I hope I do." "Of course you do," Eloise said fervently. "But it won't be the same. You must cleave unto your husband. Or at least that's what they all say," she added, with a slightly mischievous spark in her eyes. "Colin will come first, and that is how it should be. And frankly," she added, her smile growing a bit sly, "I'd have to kill you if he didn't. He is my favourite brother, after all. It really wouldn't do for him to have a disloyal wife."
Penelope laughed out loud at that.
"Do you hate me?"
Eloise asked. Penelope shook her head.
"No," she said softly. "If anything, I love you all the more, because I know how difficult it must have been to be honest with me about this." "I'm so glad you said that," Eloise said, with a loud, dramatic sigh. "I was terrified you'd say that the only solution would be for me to find myself a husband as well."
The thought had crossed Penelope's mind, but she shook her head and said,
"Of course not." "Good, because my mother has been saying it constantly."
Penelope smiled wryly. "I'd be surprised if she hadn't."
"Good afternoon, ladies."
The two women looked up to see Colin entering the room. Penelope's heart did a little flip upon seeing him, and she found herself oddly out of breath. Her heart had been doing little flips for years whenever he walked into a room, but it was somehow different now, more intense. Perhaps because she knew what it was like to be with him, to be wanted by him, to know that he would be her husband. Her heart flipped again. Colin let out a loud groan.
"You ate all the food."
"There was only one small plate of biscuits," Eloise said in their defence.
"That's not what I was led to believe," Colin grumbled.
Penelope and Eloise shared a glance, then both burst out laughing.
"What?" Colin demanded, leaning down to press a quick, dutiful kiss on Penelope's cheek.
"You sounded so sinister," Eloise explained. "It's just food."
"It's never just food,"
Colin said, plopping down in a chair. Penelope was still wondering when her cheek would stop tingling.
"So," he said, taking a half-eaten biscuit off of Eloise's plate, "what were you two talking about?"
"Lady Whistledown,"
Eloise said promptly. Penelope choked on her tea.
"Were you?"
Colin said softly, but Penelope detected a definite edge in his voice.
"Yes," Eloise said.